You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. A special weekend edition of the show. It was a tough week to push out content for the Denver Nuggets since it was a practice-only week. No games until Friday night. So I figure since we missed a little bit of time, we'll make up for a little bit of time and talk about this highly anticipated return to the hardwood of the Denver Nuggets, return to the hardwood of Gary Harris. It was great to see him back out on the floor and looking well. Looked like he had a little pep in his step. So this show will be my notes from that game. Watched it two times over. Wanted to get all of the little details in there. And so I got a lot to talk about there. In the final segment, we'll talk about a Jokic quote. He wants to be the Tim Duncan of the Denver Nuggets. I think that's encouraging if you're a Nuggets fan. That's got to be a good thing. It certainly sounded good to me. But let's start by diving right into this. Malik Beasley got the start. And this is, you know, Gary Harris back, and I wonder when he will get his starting job back. Obviously, this is a short-term thing, but the team will like to slowly work him back into the rotation. My guess is the Nuggets have a four-game homestand. I would guess that at some point in this homestand, Gary Harris will be back in the starting lineup. And if everybody stays healthy, we'll get the return of the opening night starting lineup for the first time since mid-October, which is insane. But for now, Malik Beasley gets the start, and my first note was that Will Barton had a little bit of pep in his step. You know, he was slow to return from that ab injury that he sustained, and you know, I'd heard some other people talk about, not people with the team, but some other, you know, reporters say, oh, I'd heard that you know, he was had a mental block to coming back. When he went down, he probably could have come back a week or two physically before he did, but there was this mental block in his head. So I think this last, you know, I think he had 17 games he played for the team before the All-Star break. I think those 17 games, you know, he was playing with a little bit of just mentally having to come back from what he from that injury and getting over the idea of the fear of re-injuring it. It's a core muscle. It's not a muscle you can like choose to use or not. You just are kind of always using your ab muscles for different things, so it can really mess with your head. He talked about how he stayed in the gym for All-Star break, and just I think so much of it was just mentally getting himself back in the space. Well, tonight I thought he played, and because I'd kind of known this and heard about some of this stuff from behind the scenes, when I watch him play, he's playing below the rim, and you could just see that explosiveness wasn't there. And maybe it was physical, maybe it was mental, but it sure looked like it was at the very least a mixture of both. Well, in this game, I thought he elevated on his shot. He attacked the rim. He did a lot of good things just physically that looked like his old self. So that was really nice to see. The offense never quite got rolling with this first unit, and it wasn't for lack of trying. I thought the team did a very good job of working the ball around. They had some nice sets. It's just the story of the first half of this game was that Denver could not make a shot, and especially the first 8 minutes or so of the first quarter, it just there was a lid on the rim for Denver. They kept the good process, terrible results, and as a result, they found themselves behind, getting some good looks, not making them, and then allowing Dallas to get out in transition. I think one of the major storylines for this game, and I'll talk about it here in a moment, is that Denver defensively really played with a different level of urgency and just determination. It looks like they, you know, that was the biggest question I had, probably the biggest question I had coming into this game was, you know, just how well are they going to defend after the All-Star break? Are they going to start to get back to that intensity? And through one game, I would say yes, but it didn't necessarily start in the first quarter. And a lot of that was because their offense just was stuck in the mud because they couldn't make a shot. When the second unit checked into this game, you really get a sense for just how dangerous this team is. That was one of the big storylines that stood out to me in this game was you've got the starting lineup, and I think Denver's, even with Malik Beasley and Gary Harris's spot, I think Denver's starting lineup is probably a top 6 or 7 starting lineup in all of the NBA. I mean, the Warriors, probably number one. Philadelphia has a heck of a starting lineup. There's a couple teams that have some really, really good starting lineups, but I think Denver's is right up there with any of them. And then you bring in a second unit that features Isaiah Thomas, Mason Plumlee. Tonight you had Gary Harris. That second unit is just going to murder most teams. I think Denver might have the deepest roster in all of the NBA and a top six or seven starting lineup in the NBA. So that combination, Denver can win. When you talk about the regular season and all these tough games they have coming up, Denver can win a lot of games just based on once they kind of figure out their rotations and get comfortable with kind of the flow of the game. If you can get a consistent rotation going, I think that Denver will just come at teams in waves and be able to, even if that first unit doesn't get off to a hot start against opposing second units, there's not a lot of teams that are going to be able to help that second and third wave, and that's going to be incredible. Gary Harris was back, and man, just like with Will Barton, I thought Gary Harris looked different than he did last time he was back. He looked healthy this time. And again, we'll want to see a couple games. I talked the other day about how I want to see him in person because I want to see little things like how he jogs back to the bench in a timeout, because that's when you could really notice that he had a limp to him. But tonight, he just had a little bit of pep in his step and a little bit of explosiveness. Defensively, he was getting into guys. He looked like a guy that really, really, really wants to be back to 100%, and it was really nice to see. He had some great pick-and-roll possessions with Jokic right off the bat, and you know, Gary Harris going to his right is an unstoppable, especially in the DHO. He's unstoppable when he can get to that right hand going to the right. And sometimes he'll go away from the screen to go left and attack. But a lot of times he kind of is putting himself in position to get to run into the screen going right. And he's just so good. He strong arms the ball and can elevate. He's got those big hands. He can palm and get above the rim. But he's also just like a football player. When he gets a step on you, he's stronger. Even guys that are bigger than him, there's a couple plays driving to the lane today. One of the bigs would step up. He'd put that shoulder into him and just move him out of the way. It's almost like a football player, you know, running for a Hail Mary or something, just beasting everybody out of the way and elevating for it. So it was great to see him back, but more importantly, great to see him looking healthy. Isaiah Thomas, one of the other storylines from this game, 16 points in 15 minutes. And man, is he just fun. Isaiah Thomas is just fun to watch. The Nuggets, even more, I've always liked watching this Nuggets team, even the second unit, but now you throw Isaiah Thomas in the mix and you really do feel like at all 48 minutes, anything can happen on the court, and Denver can go on a big run at any given moment. That's part of the appeal of them right now. I thought another thing that happened in this game, and I'm curious to follow the next four or five, I thought Michael Malone experimented with a couple different types of lineups in this game, and some of the lineups he threw out, it almost felt more like a let's see how these guys look together type lineup. And that's the luxury of getting to play the Dallas Mavericks short of Luka Doncic tonight. This was a very short-handed and not very talented roster that Dallas threw out there, so Denver can kind of almost used it as a glorified scrimmage. But he checks in and he plays with Jokic a few possessions. I don't think that's it. Jokic and IT can play together, and I'm sure they're going to play together a handful of minutes, but I would almost look at it more as those guys are going to they're probably, when one checks in, the other will check out a lot, and you'll always have one of those guys on. They're both elite offensive talents. When Jokic is on the court, you know, you're getting the ball popping. Everybody's playing through Jokic and cutting and knocking down threes. When Isaiah Thomas is in there, you get a lot of that same ball movement, but then he just becomes such a weapon to go off at any given moment that he has this, just so much gravity. So they played a fair amount tonight together, but I just don't see it. I don't think it's going to work. Defensively, we know it's a liability, and offensively, it's one of those things where the sum becomes less than or it becomes less than the sum of its parts. Malone basically in this game replaced Torrey Craig with Gary Harris in what I'm just going to call the IT lineup. The IT lineup features Mason Plumlee and Paul Millsap in the front court. It features Monte Morris alongside IT in the backcourt. And then in the last game, it was Torrey Craig at the three. This game, it was Gary Harris. And they both provide similar things defensively. They both can defend the wing and just be an extra, like, help side defender that so you have three-plus defenders at the three, four, and five. And then I even think Monte Morris is a plus defender against most players, especially second units. So that's the IT lineup. But you put Gary Harris out there, You get a little bit more playmaking off the dribble, a better spot-up shooter around the arc, and then probably the same level of defense. And I think that's the lineup we're going to see the most with Isaiah Thomas. And I'll tell you what, I love that lineup. I'm all in on it. It's a fun one. There haven't been a ton of lineups, like five-man lineups, that I could say I've really loved that did not feature Nikola Jokic over the last few years. A lot of the lineups with Jokic you loved, and when he was on the court, it was great. And a lot of the defensive lineups you kind of liked because they were gritty or this or that, but you didn't think, okay, this is going to be fun. Now you throw Isaiah Thomas in the mix, and those lineups are a lot of fun. Paul Millsap, I think, looks more like his true self in those lineups, so you get a little bit of him winding back the clock. So now, this is why I say the Nuggets are set up to be more fun than I think ever before in this Michael Malone, Nikola Jokic era, and it's really, really great. The first quarter, though, Nuggets finished 8 of 28 shooting. So Denver, I think they win by 10 points. They were up by 24 at one point in the third quarter, but they probably could have been up 34, 35 points if they would have just shot regular, you know, an average for them. But they were just off, as I guess is not too surprising coming out of the All-Star break. Wancho got in the game in the second quarter to start, and it's really interesting, for in my opinion, to see him out there. Again, I think Michael Malone was throwing some different lineup combinations out there just to kind of see what he has. I'm curious to see if Wancho remains in the rotation, you know, over this next four-game homestand coming up. But he played 10 minutes. He did not record a basket. He was 0 of 1, so he only had one shot, a three-pointer. He had a rebound and an assist, and he was a minus 5. So not a terribly productive stretch or game for him, but I was glad to see him at least get kind of to get out on the court and see what he has. I think that I would not be surprised if Malone used him in a couple different combinations, maybe tried him out in a couple different lineups. One of the lineups that they went with tonight with Wancho, in fact, I think he played more than half of his minutes with this lineup, was with Isaiah Thomas. I can't remember. I think, let me see if I have it down here. Oh, yeah, so it was Monte Morris, Isaiah Thomas, Gary Harris, and Wancho and Jokic. So I don't know. You know, it's the 1-2-3 from that previous lineup, but you replace Millsap and Plumlee to, you know, one a pick and roll above the rim guy, and then both guys defenders with two not great defenders. And I didn't like the look of that. I would love to see more Wancho and Jokic, but I would like to see it more with lineups that I think have a better chance of just getting into, you know, Jokic ball, that high paced half court offense. So guys like Barton, guys like, obviously Harris works, but Jamal Murray, Monte Morris, Malik Beasley, even those are the lineups I'd like to see them try out. So, that's one of the number one things I'll be looking for on Sunday, is just to see, does Wancho get back in there, and does he get back in there with the same five man groups, or do they mix it up and try to find them different spots? Isaiah Thomas can really run the pick and roll. I mean, I have a note in here just because he had two or three possessions in a row where he threw some really high level passes in the pick and roll. He just has great feel. And one of the things I like about him is he really uses his eyes as a weapon in the pick and roll. So when he's turning the corner on the pick and roll, he doesn't ever turn his head and kind of look at where he's going. He always has his eyes sort of focused ahead of him at the basket or at the paint, just kind of so he can see the whole court, use his peripherals. And he throws a lot of those passes with looking the defender in the eye or looking ahead so the defender doesn't see the pass coming and then sneaks it in. So it was one of those things I thought, man, this is something Jamal can really, I think, take from him, is use his peripheral vision a little bit more on the pick and roll. Another note I have in here, the refs were just not very good in this game. They were really, really frustrating. So much so that it actually, and I never do this, I actually looked at the over-under. Now, Denver was up by 24 points. I don't think it was like a thing that was ever going to swing the game for who was going to win. But it was one of those things where I was like, man, are they trying to get the point total over? Because there's some weird fouls going on. You know, Mejri got Jokic into foul trouble. Isaiah Thomas got into foul trouble. There were some technical fouls. It just was, I thought, a really poorly officiated game. There was that one play with Mason Plumlee where he got hacked and Dirk raised his hand to say it was me, and the refs didn't call it until it was almost, they called it once Dirk like looked and turned at him and was like, are you not going to call me for it? So pretty wild, pretty bad night for the refs, I thought, in this one. I don't think people realize how good Monte Morris is. And I know Nuggets fans, and especially people listening to the show, you know, are really, really high on him, but I think he's actually still underrated, even for the people that are high on him. He might be the best point guard on this Nuggets team. He does not make mistakes. He knocks down his shots. He does exactly what he's supposed to do. He guards his position. It's not just that he's a not – I think the appeal of him coming in was, oh, this is a guy that – you know, he won't be a big positive, but he's not going to make any mistakes. Well, he doesn't make any mistakes, but he's actually a huge positive. He can do just about anything. He gets the ball where it's supposed to go. That floater is absolute money. He is elite. He might be number one in all of the NBA at scoring at the end of the third quarter because he's always on the court at the end of the first and the end of the third. And because he's a point guard, he has the ball in his hands a lot. They run a lot of pick and roll, and he just knows how to get to his spot, elevate for that mid-range jumper, and knock it down. And I swear, if you counted just end of first quarter and end of third quarter buckets, I'll bet you he's got like 7 or 8 already this season. Buzzer beaters or last possession buckets for him, and those are huge. So I talked about Salah Mejri, a really annoying player. He's just a goon, not super talented, draws a lot of fouls. And I thought this was one of the things I was really interested in. This is the first game back from the All-Star break for Nikola Jokic. This is the first game with Jokic having an All-Star game under his belt. And Salah Mejri was able to work the refs in a way that got a bunch of ticky-tack fouls on Jokic. Well, it was really kind of a crazy thing. You thought, okay, maybe Jokic will start to get a little bit more foul calls. We'll see what happens. But no, Mejri got the better whistle from the referees tonight, which was kind of annoying. Heading into the playoffs, by the way, you know, you always see Jokic all like his arms bleeding and cut and everything. I think a week or 2 weeks before the playoffs, Michael Malone and maybe Josh Kroenke can slide him some cash under the table. Michael Malone should get a fine from calling out the referees in a game and just talking about how little respect Jokic does. And this can be a real boon. You make it a national story. And you kind of push that narrative so people remember. So when the games are happening, everybody can kind of remember, oh, yeah, this is a talking point. Malone might do well to earn a tech and earn a fine going into the playoffs just to get Jokic a little bit more respect from the referees. It's long overdue. He got his third foul, 2 charges in a row, and had to go to the bench, and it was a drag. Murray's defensive effort in the second quarter picked up quite a bit, and he was able to sustain it for the rest of the game. Michael Malone in his post game, this was his number one note from the game, was just the intensity that Jamal Murray played with. And I have to agree, especially on second watch, his focus on the defensive end and his effort and energy level was just through the roof. And one of the things I thought about, so Denver goes 8 of 28 in the first quarter. They clearly had a defensive mindset in this game, and I wondered, was it that extra – part of it is probably just rust coming off the All-Star break, coming off of 8 days off from their last game. That was probably 70% of it. But I wondered if a little bit of it was, you know, Denver had not played with that level of intensity on the defensive end. So I wonder if they were just a little bit fatigued and having to relearn what it's like to play that hard on both ends of the court. They did a good job of it to start the year. But if you recall, to start the year, the first like 10 or 11 games, they go 9-1 or 10-1 or something like that. And it was off of mediocre offense but really good defense. And I wonder if that good defense kind of wore them down offensively and they weren't able to get into it. It's just I don't know for a fact, but tonight they missed so many shots that they usually make that I wondered if there was a little bit of fatigue there. And then I have a note in here that Malik Beasley had a really nice pass in the pick and roll, and this is big for him. I've talked about how when he came in to the rotation this year and was starting to play heavy minutes, he was doing one thing, catching and shooting and just moving the ball where it's supposed to do. Just don't make mistakes. Stay within yourself. Well, he started over the last 15 games or so, 10, 15 games, to make basic passes in the pick and roll, and today he had a nice lob to Mason Plumlee that was just perfectly timed, perfectly placed, and those are the types of plays. Right now, the reason a lot of people in my mentions, because they just hate Will Barton for whatever reason. Will Barton, by the way, I thought had a fantastic game, 50%, 4 of 8 from the field, and he had 2 missed shots in the final minute of this game, like just because he had to shoot. Denver was trying to run out the clock, so he's really 4 of 6 for most of this game. 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 10 points, a +8, just a 2 steals. I thought Will Barton tonight played within himself, did exactly what he was supposed to do, and was a nice positive for the team. Malik Beasley, I see a lot of people say, oh, he should be starting in his place. The one thing Beasley can't do is, nearly as well as Barton, is put the ball on the floor and run that pick and roll. Well, Beasley tonight, you know, and over the last 15 games has demonstrated at least the first steps of becoming a much better, reliable guy that you can count on to do that. So it gives you hope that, you know, a little bit of work over the summer, continue the trajectory that he's on, and a year or two's time, he might be able to fill that role, even maybe even as soon as next year. But what I mean is, he I didn't think he would be the type of player to be a put it on the floor and go to the basket kind of guy, but he seems to be that guy now, and to be able to make reads, and that's a big positive for Denver. Mm-hmm.
the Nuggets really turned up the defensive intensity at another level. I thought they did it in the second quarter, but then again, after the halftime, they came out and just flew around. And if they come out, if they bring that same effort and energy to Pepsi Center on Sunday, they're going to win by 50 points. Denver, when they play at the level that they played in that third quarter defensively, is just going to blow teams out. They have the offensive horses, they have the depth, they have all of those things, but when they just put that much effort into stopping their opponents, they're going to win a lot of games by a lot of points. So that I thought was the biggest difference. They opened this game up, I think it led by 24 points at one time in the third quarter, even though it was a close game going into the half. Jamal Murray had a three-pointer. I have a note in here. He had a three-pointer that he missed so bad, straight on, that he missed so bad right that it missed the rim. And it's just crazy to me. Murray's shot, I just still don't seem like I have a great sense for what kind of shooter he is. He has big moments, big stretches where he looks like a Steph Curry. Well, maybe not. Nobody's a Steph Curry, but he looks like a Damian Lillard, Kemba Walker type scorer, like Kyrie Irving. Oh, this guy can just catch fire and he can kill you. And then he has some nights or some shots where he misses so badly that he doesn't even hit the rim. And you think, you don't see some of your elite shooters doing that too often. They just seem to be a little bit more consistent. So I don't have a great read on him. I thought the best possession of this entire game, I'll probably cut a clip of this tomorrow or something, throw it online somewhere, but Jamal Murray set up the possession. He gets Jokic at the free throw line. They run one pick and roll, basically, I think between him and Beasley, or actually him and Barton. Goes right into a handoff between him and Beasley. So you get two pick and rolls or two DHOs basically on one possession, and it ends up with Beasley hitting Jokic on the short roll and getting a wide open layup. And these are the types of plays. Malone was ecstatic about this possession, but what I liked about it, and you've listened to the show long enough, you know I've talked about this, when Denver gets into the second, third, or fourth pick and roll with Jokic in the half court and in one possession, they score, I would say, 80% of the time. It's just... it's a matter of, can they be patient enough to get into those types of possessions? And they have enough scores that you have to always be attacking. You have to always be looking for the seams. But when you get into those moments where you get pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll, 9 times out of 10, Jokic is going to find somebody. And 9 times out of 10, the amount of weapons that Denver has on their roster, somebody's going to be open to knock down a shot. And then Jamal Murray heated up. So he had that terrible miss. I don't know if it's kind of funny. He missed that one so bad and so off that I wondered if he was like, okay, I got to start making some shots. And he did. He heated up. I think he had like 8 points in the course of a minute and a half or so. And a couple of those just in rhythm. You can tell he has he can have a slow trigger sometimes. You can tell when he stops thinking and it's just like, I'm shooting it the next time I touched it. And he did that tonight and he knocked down some buckets. And the next thing you know, the game is open. That's Jamal Murray, by the way. Not a great consistent player at the moment. Not consistently great defensively tonight. I thought he brought a lot of consistency the last three quarters of the game. But offensively, sometimes you just don't know what you're going to get from him. But when he's on like he was tonight, Denver goes from one of the better teams in the NBA to unbeatable or mostly unbeatable. That's kind of the value of him, and I think that's why long-term you look at him as the second piece of the puzzle, the second biggest piece of the puzzle, even though I don't think he's that at the moment. But when he's on fire with all of the other things Denver has and all the things Jokic does to open things up, when Jamal Murray creates that much gravity for himself, then Jokic really is able to cook in the half court and they just become unstoppable. Isaiah Thomas also heated up, knocked down a couple threes in that quarter, and it was just fun. The route was on. Some other things happened in this game. A quick note here. Gary Harris, he's one of the things I did not like about his game this season before he got hurt. He's really kind of fallen in love with dancing with the ball in the mid-range and then settling for that pull-up. You know, he'll go through the legs. He'll kind of size a guy up like he's about to shimmy shake, and then he just goes up for the jumper. That's a terrible shot. And I know he's added that, and there's a moment for it late in shot clocks, late in games or whatever, but he goes to it a little bit more than I would like. And you know, one of the things about Malik Beasley that's been so good is that he's not doing anything other than what he is supposed to be doing. Gary Harris has more talent, but sometimes you need to know when not to use your weapons just as much as it is important to have them. Got a little bit sloppy at the end of the third. Monte and Isaiah Thomas just played together so well that I think they need a nickname of some sort. We just need something to reference that lineup because it's very... unconventional to play two guys that small in stature, but who are that skilled and have that good of chemistry right now. They just seem to really work well off of each other, and I like it a lot. And then that's it. And so I want to wrap up, actually, my last note here. So the Nuggets get the win. It was only 10, but it wasn't nearly as close as that. Denver gets outscored by 7 in the fourth quarter, so they were up 17 going into the fourth. But this was a rout. This is exactly what Denver needed. I don't think anybody exerted themselves too much. And you get a good look at just how much talent is on this roster. But perhaps the most exciting moment of today's broadcast on Altitude. Vic Lombardi, on the pregame show, they aired an interview that Vic Lombardi had with Nikola Jokic. They sat down together and he asked him basically, and I don't think anybody has actually asked Jokic this point blank yet. He's locked up with Denver for the next 5 years, so it's almost like out of sight, out of mind at the moment. But Vic asked him, would you like to, you know, do you see yourself staying in Denver for your whole career? And he immediately said, oh yeah, I was just talking to Tim Connelly. I can be the Tim Duncan of the Denver Nuggets, the Denver Nuggets Tim Duncan. It's kind of a funny thing to think about, but it could be reality. That quote, now it's not like a strong endorsement of, oh yeah, this is where I'll be, or he didn't even necessarily say I want to be or this or that, but it was clear in his answer that at this very moment, that's what he would like to see. He's happy here. He likes the organization. And just the thought of not just having Jokic for the next 5 years, but having him for the next 10 or 15 or who knows how long, is just, it's one of those things where I think we're all having so much fun covering this team right now, and as fans, we're all having so much fun watching them. There's this sense of, you know, their window. What's their window? Jamal Murray and Gary Harris in the next year and the year after that and the year after that. And, you know, those things are fun. It's really fun. But one of the things that makes the NBA different than every other league is that it is fun to think about not just this season, but what's the 2 and 3 and 4 year arc. But you never really think about what's the 10 and 15 year arc, because your brain just can't go out that long. But, you know, if he does have a Dirk-like career in Denver or a Tim Duncan-like career where he spends 15, 20 years here, you're talking about 2 decades of Denver Nuggets basketball that if Jokic is on your team and playing at the level he is right now or better, your team is good. And that's what happened with Tim Duncan. It just, some of the pieces around, you know, the core three of that Spurs roster changed, but they always had that same identity because Tim Duncan was their identity. And just the thought of that, it was the first time I really paused to think, man, this guy might be around for a while. And if Denver can convince him and be good enough to him that he wants to stay here, we're not just talking about a 3-year window or a 5-year window. We're talking about a team that has an opportunity to really build sustainable success. And I hope that the organization is not just thinking short term and not just thinking small, but looking at this and saying, we have a guy that's talented enough we can build off of and build an entire organization around. And if they do that, we're all in for, like I said, not just a good 5 years, but a good decade, maybe even 2. And that's really, really cool to think. I would love, I have a daughter that's 2 and a daughter that's 4, and it would be really neat for them to be able to grow up in the Nikola Jokic era, not just spend a couple years in it before they're too old, while they're still too young to know what's going on, but it would be neat to see every little step of the way this Nuggets team develop and for them to kind of grow into that. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. This was a good one. I think the next game against the Clippers gets a little bit tougher, even though it's at home, and then the real onslaught begins with teams like Oklahoma City and Utah coming into Denver, and so Denver has one more, I would say, slightly more difficult game to kind of get used to what they're doing, and then the real battle begins. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again on Monday with a brand new episode.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.